Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, on today's show, we've got Brian Mendler. Brian is a certified K-12 special education teacher with extensive experience working with challenging students. I think you're going to really enjoy this show. He's also the author of a book titled The Taming of the Crew. The book provides educators with easy-to-use strategies for preventing and responding to difficult, disruptive, and defiant students. Stay tuned. I think you're going to enjoy the show.
Brian, what I'd like to do is just kind of start off with you telling us about you as a kid, and then what you do as an adult now.
I was a difficult kid when I was in school. I struggled tremendously with reading and ADHD, and kind of the combination of both of those things just made school a difficult place for me. I was removed from school in sixth grade and sent to a private school where things definitely got a lot better for me, for the remainder of that year and really, continued to improve, although I struggled a lot in high school as well. I was never in any way one of the best students at the school. I was always smart. I always was able to communicate, and I got through high school. I told a story today about a teacher that really, in a lot of ways, inspired me by basically saying, the goal in life is to be good at one thing, and not just good, but great. And what's the one thing in life that you're going to become great at? And he used to say that in school, it's very different from real life, because in school, to be successful, you have to be good at, 5, 6, 7 different things: math, science, English, social studies, foreign language, that art. But in real life, you've got to be great at one thing. And I always kept that sort of in the back of my mind. And I never knew what that one thing would be, but, I went to college and took a public speaking class and kind of realized that was my calling. And then became a teacher in a lot of ways because of that. And that's led to my career today, which basically I have an amazing job. I get to travel the country and teach teachers how to work with difficult kids and try to inspire them as best I can. So it's been a pretty cool ride, and it's been fun, and kind of where I'm at.
Excellent. Thanks for sharing that with us. One of the things you talked about today, my next couple questions are really more like restatements of something that I just want you to talk about. So I'm kind of taking it out of context. But today, one of the things you said was you were giving a scenario with a teacher basically threatening kids with what's going to happen if, and you made the statement. So are you going to tell me that that's a consequence? And I just wondered if you could talk about that for a minute.
I'm trying to think of what you're referring to.
The idea of sending you to in-school suspension or sending you to ministry.
But basically, I don't know if I'm going to hit on that exactly, but the bigger issue that I was talking about is the difference between consequences and punishment. And, in school, a lot of times we punish kids. We use in-school suspension, we use detention, we use ISS or OSS, we use phone calls home. I mean, all sort of punitive measures to try to get kids to conform to what we want. And I think there's a big difference between punishing kids, which the goal of punishment is to inflict misery, it's to make people feel crappy and not good, and consequences, which are intended to teach a better way of doing something. And so for me, I'm a fan of consequences. And I use the example today, you make a mess, you clean it up. That would be the consequence. And, based on that definition of my definition, at least of the word consequence, it can't be predetermined. It's not possible, because if a consequence is a natural outcome of a behavior, and the behavior hasn't happened yet, then how do you know the outcome of that behavior? And I didn't even use this example today, but one of the examples I use for this sometimes is, I can go to the driving range and work on my golf swing for 3 hours. And you could try to predict what the consequence would be, and the consequence of that might be that it'll get better, but it's I practice wrong, then the consequences that I get worse. And so the point is that until a behavior happens, you can't really know a consequence, which is why the concept of predetermining consequences is really ineffective for most kids. You know, we decide ahead of time what's going to happen to them if they break a rule, but, you know,
right.
I mean, the goal is to teach them a better way of behaving, and you know, that's, most schools are not set up to do that.
Gotcha. Right along with that, because, you know, one of the things that you were talking about is that some of the behaviors of the teachers were just like neon signs to, you know, basically mess with me. And, for example, you were talking about having posted on the board their idea that, you know, here are my rules and here are my consequences. And you said, you know, the first and second ones are warnings, then they might as well stand at the door and give out 30 free disruption tickets.
Yeah.
I mean, that was such an awesome statement, because I can imagine if that's what...
But it's true. I mean, that's right. I mean, it might be odd, but it's my bigger issue is that I don't understand why we predetermine them in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 order. Like, and that's what happens in a lot of schools. So it's kind of like first offense, here's what happens. Second offense, here's what happens. Third offense, here's what happens. And we're just like robots. I mean, we don't actually think, is what we're doing right now to this kid going to help him not do the behavior again? Now, that's the goal of a consequence. The goal of a consequence is to get a student to not do the behavior again. So, you know, if we're doing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 system, we're not thinking. We're just, so number one's always the warning. Okay, well, you know, if a kid like me, I'll do my best disruption first and get away with a warning. I mean, some behaviors don't deserve a warning. And if I have a system that says number one is always a warning, then I have to warn a kid. It just doesn't make sense, you know?
Right.
So what I recommend, but do you want to? But what I recommended today was, I said, you know, instead of that, just replace your numbers with bullet points, because that enables you to use anything on the list, or you can go off the list. I mean, there's times where a student makes a mistake, and we're not always, look, if the goal in school is always to punish or consequence a kid when they make a mistake, that's ridiculous. I mean, the only way you learn in life is by making mistakes and, you know, and growing from them. And, you know, and I feel like in schools, I mean, sometimes kids should be allowed to make mistakes without having it be a consequence. And if you have a bullet point with the word other along on your bullet points, then you can go off the list, and behaviors can be, you know, consequences can turn into learning experiences, you know.
That's awesome. I love it. That's because oftentimes it's just funny, because having been in the situation where I was the one you would have gotten sent to, you look at some of them and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, the teacher walked themselves right into it. And what you're talking about is giving them the ability to use their judgment to come up with other ways that actually make more sense, instead of just go ahead. Let me just go ahead and get my best out now, because later that comes when it comes.
Look, the other thing, I mean, when we're giving kids a consequence, then what that does also is it automatically assumes that the kid was the problem. And, you know, and sometimes the teacher's the problem. I mean, there's teachers in this country that, you know, they metaphorically, they pour gasoline on the fire instead of water. I mean, they escalate a situation instead of de-escalating it. And, I mean, with all due respect, a kid is a 12-year-old kid or a 10-year-old kid, and the adult is the one that's supposed to be trained in how to defuse. And so, you know, if we're just consequencing kids, I mean, the assumption is that they must have done something wrong. And I'm not saying they don't do things wrong. Sometimes they do, but not always. And
right.
All I want people to do is think. I want people to look at every individual situation for its own merit and really think through what happened and what are we going to do, with the goal that the behavior doesn't happen again. That should always be the goal.
I love that, because I so many times it is simply they get themselves into this mindset that, you know, you come into it and you go, which one of you is the adult?
Exactly.
Is there an adult in this room? And so I love what you're talking about. Let's kind of change the direction we're going here, and let's talk a little bit about. One of the things you mentioned was when you were young, and you were talking about the kid's perspective on going to a different room than your friends, when, you know, you came to the building and then, you know, they went one way and you went the other way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, so I mean, I can talk about my past. I really, it's the today it's more about, do we separate kids or not? You know, what is inclusion or what is self-contained, and how do we think as educators? You know, today in my workshop, I said to the group, how many of you ever spent any time in special ed self-contained? Not one person raised their hand. And that seems to be true pretty much everywhere I go. And what I said is, it's really easy to do to people what's never been done to us. And, you know, look, special ed, self-contained special ed can be a really, really great place. It really can. But at the same time, I mean, the downside to it is all the other kids know that you're in special ed. And how do you go one way when they come, when you all come to school, and then they go the other way? And having everybody know that you're different, or, you know, you're a problem, or you have something wrong with you, is not an easy pill to swallow when you're a kid and you're trying to figure out, you know, your life, and being cool is the most important thing, and, you know, being popular is you know, it's if you're an age where you're being popular is what it's all about, and everybody's talking about stories from what happened in their class, and you weren't in there because you're somewhere else. And, you know, it's again, it's getting people to think about what we're doing, and not to just blindly just say, yeah, you're going to be down in one room with one teacher all day. I mean, there's still middle schools and high schools in this country that self-contain their kids, where they literally are in one room with one teacher all day. So you have 11th graders that are in a room with a teacher all day, and then people wonder why they act like they're in fifth grade. I mean, well, stop wondering. I mean, if you treat kids like they're in fifth grade, then that's how they're going to act. And it shouldn't be a surprise. One of the things I say a lot of the time is, if you took your top 10 kids in any school, in any high school, your numbers 1 through 10 that are going to go to the best colleges, and you put them in one room with one teacher all day, you would make them disturb. You know, correct, it wouldn't take long for them to become insane, because they'd go nuts. They'd say, this is crazy. And a lot of times in school, we do that with our worst, or our most disruptors. So, you know, it's not a lot of the things that we do in school, just from a really, you know, just a common sense standpoint, they just don't make a whole lot of sense. So it's not that I'm not a believer in self-contained. I am. I just don't believe in with one, you know, one teacher all day. I'm a believer in departmentalization of high school special ed people, where you take your special ed staff and you really integrate them into a department. So you'd have a math special ed person, a science special ed person, a social studies. And then the kids that are in self-contained, they would have a special ed teacher for every class, and they would travel together, but they would get a different teacher. So they would get a special ed math teacher for math, a special ed science teacher for science, and so on and so forth. And, you know, the instruction quality improves, and because the teacher only has to teach one content, or maybe two content a day, and it's a better overall thing for all the kids.
Right.
You know, it's not ideal. I mean, it doesn't get your special ed kids in the general ed setting, but at least they switch classes, you know, and they feel like they're in high school instead of in elementary school.
Right. That's, you know, having taught in a school and a team where we had teachers kind of like what you just described, you know, it was funny because the other kids would get used to them, and they'd go home and tell their parents, hey, I got two teachers for math, or I got two teachers for social studies or whatever. And it was pretty cool, because you could see where it benefited all, but the main benefit was that there was no stigma attached to those teachers being in the room.
That's why I think there's two equal benefits. I think two equal main benefits. One is that there's no stigma, but two is that because the teacher, the special ed teacher, is departmentalized, they become a content expert. So, like, they might teach emotionally disturbed or EBD, you know, self-contained social studies first period, but then they go to inclusion social studies second period. So they really get a good dose of how to teach the content, because they're learning it from a content expert. So
awesome. So
the quality of instruction for your special ed kid dramatically improves.
That's
and of
awesome.
Course, along with that, go test scores. So immediately you'll see test scores tremendously improve in schools that departmentalize versus schools that don't. This makes sense that would happen, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Hey,
It's crazy that all schools don't do it. It's crazy. It doesn't. It's absolutely mind blowing to me that schools can still get away with the traditional one room with, you know, seven or eight kids all day long. I mean, people wonder why those teachers quit all the time. I mean, they're being asked to do a job that's thoroughly impossible. There's a lot of high schools in this country where, you know, if there's an English teacher that, know, not only do they only teach English, but they might only teach English 9 or English 10 all day.
Yes.
Yet in a lot of self-contained programs, the teacher's supposed to teach math, science, English, social studies at multiple grade levels all at the same time. It's absurd. It's not humanly possible to do.
Right.
It's an enormous disservice to the kids that are in those class and their parents that are relying on the education system to give their kid the best education possible.
The younger the kid, but the higher up they go, oh my gosh, they're going to get so behind. They have no concept of being able to be successful in those.
I agree. And I think elementary is a little bit different, but I still believe in departmentalization with elementary kids as well. Maybe not to the extent, but I think, half the day and half the day. Like, I think it's good for kids to get one teacher for half the day and another teacher for the other half. And I think you can start them as early as possible. Yep. I think a lot of times we underestimate kids. We think they can't handle things that they can handle. And the reality is, if you do this with them from the time they're in kindergarten, then it's all they know.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Of course. It makes switching classes, it's great, a whole lot easier when you've done it since kindergarten.
Right.
Kind of like if you started learning Spanish in kindergarten, generally you're a lot better at it by the time you get to sixth grade. You've been doing it for 6 years.
It's amazing how that works.
Right, isn't it?
Yes,
you're
it is.
Right,
it's amazing. Let me ask you, if you had one thing that you wanted the teachers to take away from your training sessions, what would it be?
It's a tough question.
I know.
I guess the thing I want them to take away is that, is that it's never okay to give up on a kid. It's never okay to quit on someone. It's never okay to say, I don't want this kid in my class, or, I can't stand him or her, or, they don't belong here. Like, all those kind of things that sometimes we all catch ourselves saying. I mean, I'm not saying I'm perfect either, but the reality is that, we're professionals, and as a professional, the goal is to give every ounce of energy and effort that I have, change the life of these kids. And it's to remember that there's always a story. Like, you don't necessarily know the story and where the kid came from, but there is always one. And I truly believe that no kid said, shows up to kindergarten and says, I want to be the disruptive one. I want to be the one
that is
unmotivated. I want to be the one that gets in trouble. I think a lot of times it just sort of happens to kids based on the system that is created for them, and the structure that happens in a regular classroom. And so, the goal for teachers is to always just never-ending effort and always believing that you can change the life of a kid. And it's so much greater and deeper than, did he pass my science test, or did he do his math homework? Like, at the end of the day, all that stuff's irrelevant. Like, it doesn't matter. I mean, people try to say that it does, but in reality, what you get on a fourth grade exam is 100% thoroughly irrelevant to your life. It is, and no one can convince me otherwise.
Yeah, I do not disagree with you.
A fourth grade test matters that much. Right. It just doesn't,
You will not catch me disagreeing with you. That's
but a teacher making a kid feel like crap does matter, because
right, it does.
That's what gets kids to give up and quit.
Right. Yeah, they say, I'm done with this. I'm done. It doesn't. Yeah, let me get out.
Absolutely.
That's the worst thing you want. The last thing you want. I didn't know if you've authored a couple of books, and I was wondering if you wanted to mention any of them.
I've co-authored three, and then I've authored one on my own. The one I wrote on my own is called The Taming of the Crew, which is kind of a play on The Taming of the Shrew, but I changed it to Crew.
I love the name.
thank you, yeah. Basically the book is, it's an easy-to-read book. It's a lot in my speaking style. It's strategy-loaded. It's a lot of stories, and it's to the point. It's hard-hitting, and tells it like it is, and it's not, theory based. It's much more, here's what a kid did in my room last week, and here's how we fixed it, or here's what we tried and it didn't work, and so we did this instead. And that's really the tone. A lot of people hear me speak, and then they go, oh, I read your book, and I can hear your voice in the book. and I say, yeah, that's kind of how I did it. So, it's not researchy, so to speak. It's much more, just kind of. To the point and easy to read. A lot of people tell me they read it in a day. I co-authored Discipline with Dignity, third edition, which that book has been a national bestseller for years. And you know, been used all over the country. And I always joke with people, that book's not nearly as good as The Taming of the Crew.
but they're
both good. One sold a lot more than the other, though. What are you going to do?
Yours is gonna hit it big here soon too, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll see. Either way.
Hey, in kind of closing, is there some place where people can find you and your company and on social media, like websites, Facebook and Twitter? Can you tell us those real quick?
Yeah, well, I'm on Twitter at Brian Medler is my handle, and you know, I've really only in the past probably 3 to 4 months really started using Twitter. Understanding it a lot better now, and you know, and using it a lot more. I'm also on Facebook, and I'm online. I mean, if you go on Google and just type in my name, there's videos of my seminar clips, and our website is the Teacher Learning Center, the company that represents me. The website is TLC, Tom, Larry, Charlie, with a hyphen, and then STEMS, which is short for seminars, STEMS.com. And any information about bringing me in to speak at your school or your event or keynote. You know, I do it all pretty much, and you know, as long as it's related to classroom management, discipline, or motivation.
That's awesome. I got to tell you, the teachers loved you today, and like I said at the beginning, they kept talking about how can we get them back, and you are coming back to us in January, which is awesome. But they're all like, they're trying to figure out how to get you know, right inside their schools and so forth.
Yeah.
And so you're really inspiring, and you make them rethink. Strategies and things that they've used in the past to try and bring some dignity to kids.
Days like today, I mean, I know they had opened it up to a lot of different teachers in the area, and a lot of times the ones who choose to come today, it's like you're preaching to the choir. I mean, a lot of them were telling me at lunch and stuff, they're like, well, this is great, but the 5 in my building that really need to hear this aren't here. And that makes sense. I mean, a lot of times people that really need the work, you know, you have to really believe that you want to get better. And there's times where, you know, administrators send individual people because they say, you need this help. And other times they let people volunteer. Generally when you volunteer, I mean, we had a ton of special ed people in there today.
Right.
They usually totally get this. So, you know.
Right. That's a good part of your audience. I know that it's always a shame that the ones who really need it try and avoid as long as possible from coming in contact with it.
Exactly.
Brian, I got to tell you, I greatly appreciate it. I enjoyed your talk today, and I look forward to you coming back in January. I thank you for taking time to talk with me, because I know you're driving right now. And, I greatly appreciate it. I wish you the best, and look forward to you coming back, and happy travels.
You got it,
man. Take care.
No problem. Take care. I'll talk to you later.
Talk to you later. Hey, now that was Brian Medler talking to us here at the Heart of Georgia RESA on Thinking, Learning, Leading, K-12. And I got to tell you, he's awesome. You need to go to his blog, go to his website, go to the him on Twitter and Facebook, connect with him, and your teachers can't go wrong. They're going to get inspired by him. Everyone's going to just feel this need to change practices and so forth. Just an amazing, amazing individual. He gets into his past, and then he talks about how that's focused him on who he is today and why he sends the message that he does. Wish him the best, and really thankful that he took time to talk to us today here for Thinking, Learning, Leading, K-12. You have an awesome day.
Hello, listeners. We would like to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. Check back often for updates and new material.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the Heart of Georgia Precinct.